Hi, friends. Welcome to the Wisdom with Walter podcast. I'm Claire, student and friend of renowned meditation teacher Walter Bellin. In these conversations, Walter and I talk about the most effective path to healing I have found, which is the combination of effortless meditation and Walter's inner growth practices. Let's get started. I'm so glad that we've gone through a lot of the foundational parts of your work so we can now start to dig into the details a little bit more. When I first understood more about the relationship between anger, sadness, fear, and powerlessness, it really helped explain how I was feeling and explained a lot of situations where I felt stuck or powerless. So I want to talk through each of these and then talk about how these kind of all tie together. So let's start with fear. Tell me more about fear.
Okay. Fear is actually something that's very important in our evolutionary armor. With the development of mammals on Earth, a new layer of the brain was laid down. Up until mammals became the kind of center of evolution on this Earth, it was mainly reptiles. And reptiles have only what we call a primitive brain. The mammalian brain is made up actually of three layers. There's the primitive brain, and then there's the emotional brain, which includes the amygdala, which is that part of the brain that's scanning for dangers all the time in the environment. And then there's the rational part of the brain, what we call the neocortex. When we evolved as humans, we needed to have something as a warning that there was danger around us so that we'd get off our ass and do whatever was necessary to deal with whatever that danger was, flight, fight, freeze responses, those kinds of things. That's our evolutionary gift for security or safety, is to make sure that we have a warning when something dangerous is around us. As long as we were living in small hunter-gatherer groups, the primary things that we had to fear were external. That is, they tended to be things like saber-toothed tigers, poisonous snakes, you know, woolly mammoths, this sort of thing, when we were living as hunter-gatherers. Now, about 5,000 to 7,000 years ago, as we started living in larger groups, villages and then city-states, our lives changed a lot in that we were protected from many of the external threats that we would have, the things I just mentioned, saber-toothed tigers, woolly mammoths, the poisonous snakes, things like that. What happened is the type of fear we began to experience was fear that was socially sourced rather than biologically sourced fear. Now, we still have that ability for biologically sourced fear. It's a damn good thing, because if we're standing in front of an onrushing freight train, it's a good thing to feel some fear and get us off the tracks. But the primary fears that most of us feel now are socially sourced fears. And socially sourced fears are the fear something unwanted is going to happen, or we're not going to be able to prevent something unwanted from happening. Or on the other hand, something that we really want to make happen, we're not able to make that happen. But when we fear, it'll be things like fear of failure, fear of being rejected, fear of being humiliated, all these kinds of fears. They're purely socially sourced. They don't have any biological threat to us. We also have some more general fears, like fear of the unknown, or fear that there's something just fundamentally wrong with us. But in these cases, also, it's always because we're worried that something we don't want to happen might happen, and we fear this is a possibility. Now, with socially sourced fears, if we fear that something unwanted is going to happen, like we're going to get humiliated, or we're going to be judged, or we're going to fail, or whatever it is, what we fear is not the actual physical outcome in our life. It's rather the way we're going to feel emotionally when that happens. And the way we're going to feel is hurt and sad. Okay? If we're humiliated, that's a version of deep hurt and sadness. Hurt and sadness, to a large extent, are based on fear. In other words, if the unwanted outcome occurs, then we're going to be hurt. So one way of dealing with this is to withdraw inside of ourselves and not do much, and therefore not expose ourselves very much. But the most common way that people often deal with it is to become very aggressive. And the more aggressive people become, the more angry they become. So here's where anger comes in. The more angry and aggressive people become, the less they will feel that feeling of sadness or hurt, and the feeling of fear of the unwanted outcome. So people often get into habitual behavioral patterns that involve a lot of anger. So you can see now that anger and hurt and sadness and fear are all closely related. But the foundation of this is fear. Okay. And the hurt sadness will be a result of certain feared outcomes occurring. And the anger is a way of trying to deal with empowering ourselves when we're in that state of fear or hurt. And of course, it doesn't work very well because all it does is drive a lot of other people away and causes us often to have even worse failures than we would have had if we had never gotten into that cycle of anger.
Just to summarize, the two types of fear are either biological or physical fear, which is what hunter-gatherers experienced many years ago. And then we're talking about socially sourced fear that's more common now, which is when we're fearing how we're going to feel emotionally about something, if we're going to feel humiliated or judged.
And interestingly, part of it that causes a lot of problems for us is that we get into this highly alert state when we have this kind of fear and anxiety around us. That highly alert state is something that, for only biologically based fear, the only time you would feel that is when you needed to feel that, because that would get you to do something in response to whatever the threat was, okay? But now we're stuck in a situation where we can feel this emotion for long periods of time, but there's nothing we can do about it. So consequently, that's why the level of anxiety that there is in our society is really on the rise very steeply in a way that is very dangerous to our whole society.
We're all sitting in this socially sourced fear that's driving anxiety. And to summarize the relationship between fear, hurt, and sadness and anger, we can't show this on the podcast, but if you think about a cone-shaped diagram, fear is at the bottom. And fear, like you said, makes us feel hurt or sadness about this potential unwanted emotional outcome. And then anger sits at the top. And the reason anger sits at the top is because anger is what can pull us out of feeling the sadness or fear, but often in a way that's not beneficial for our relationships.
In a way which is dysfunctional. That's right. Yep.
And so when we're thinking about this cone diagram that again has anger on the top, hurt and sadness in the middle, and fear on the bottom, fear generates hurt, sadness, and anger, making hurt and sadness fear-based emotions. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
In other words, what we're saying here basically is that we wouldn't even experience hurt or sadness unless fear was there. Or let's put it this way, we wouldn't experience hurt or sadness that went beyond the bounds of what's healthy to experience if it weren't for fear being there. Fear is the underlying reason why we feel sad for a long period of time. So if we fear that we're going to lose a relationship, for example, we can fear that for a long time without losing it, and it bothers us for that whole length of time, which is there because we fear something that is a potential outcome. And then after, if it actually does happen, then we get to feel a lot of fear that, wow, now that I've lost this relationship, maybe I'll never have a relationship. Maybe no one will ever love me again, and so forth. And so what it does, it's natural for human beings to feel hurt in certain circumstances. If someone you love leaves, it's healthy and natural to feel fear. But we're talking now about that kind of fear and sadness, which is extended, lasts for long periods of time, and has no resolution. Okay, that's based on fear. If fear weren't there, that wouldn't occur at all. Okay? And of course, the anger is a way of trying to deal with that kind of extended hurt sadness so that we won't have to feel it. Because when we feel hurt and sad, we don't feel strong. We don't feel capable. We don't feel that we can make things happen out there. So if we can get angry, maybe we won't be buoyed down by that feeling of hurt and sadness. And the underlying fear won't be there. We won't be feeling anxious when we're angry. We won't be anticipating bad outcomes when we're angry.
When we're thinking about fear, there's an underlying feeling that we're powerless to do anything about the hurt or sadness or the emotion that's coming.
Yeah.
So a sense of powerlessness, whether we are conscious of it or not, is the underlying driver of socially sourced fears. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Definitely. Remember what we're talking about now is fear of either certain specific outcomes, failure, being humiliated, being judged, all those kinds of things that do have a purely social source to them. But the important thing about this is underlying that fear is always a feeling that we're powerless to prevent the unwanted outcome from happening. In other words, if it weren't for the feeling of powerlessness, we wouldn't feel the fear. If we weren't feeling the fear, we wouldn't have that extended unnatural hurt or sadness and the need to live in anger and so forth. So the most foundational experience is actually the feeling that we're powerless either to prevent something that we don't want from happening or to be able to make something that we want to happen. But always those two are connected, meaning that if we can't make something happen that we want to happen, that usually means something that we don't want to happen is going to happen. It's our feeling of powerlessness that causes us to feel the fear. And the proof of that is very simple. If we do, we could just take step 1, 2, and 3, and we'd have exactly the outcome we wanted. And we were confident of that. We wouldn't feel fear. It's there only because in that circumstance, we feel powerless. So powerlessness is the foundation of fear, which is the foundation of that extended unhealthy kind of hurt and sadness, which is the foundation for being angry. There are times or circumstances where anger is actually a healthy response. If someone goes out of their way to do something that hurts you, it's quite natural for you to feel some anger. So there's nothing wrong with a feeling of anger. In fact, it's a protective mechanism so that if you are really threatened, you could respond in a way that would drive the threat away. But we're talking now about an entirely different kind of anger where it's being used to smother or dilute the feelings of the extended feelings of hurt or sadness and the fear. Foundational is the sense of powerlessness. So there's two ways that we tend to react in terms of how we organize our behavior externally in response to the sense of powerlessness. One way is to play very small and safe. So we get onto what we call a security treadmill. We try to make sure that we don't get into any situations where the trigger is going to be pulled on our usual fear and then hurt, sadness, and anger responses and so forth. So if we play small enough, if we don't present ourselves to our environment, there's less chance that we're going to be challenged in a way that will bring up the sense of powerlessness. Okay? The other way of dealing with the sense of powerlessness is exactly what we talked about before, becoming angry and aggressive. Those are the two kinds of categories of dysfunctional behavior that tend to come out of that feeling of powerlessness that's underneath. In all cases, it's to overcome the feeling of powerlessness, one by not being or preventing ourselves from getting into any circumstances where this might come up, and the other by getting angry and aggressive and therefore being able to smother that feeling of powerlessness.
Can you now talk to us about an example for you or for somebody else?
I had one that was very similar to yours. Because my mother, when I was a child of 7, was taken away to a mental hospital for many months, this was an extreme shock to me because she was the only source that I had of any affection in my childhood life. And I didn't realize this, but when I became an adult, my way of trying to overcome the effects that happened when I was 7. And by the way, I had no idea consciously that's what I was doing, was to look for a woman that was going to fulfill the need of a child of 7. So I was out there constantly seeking this love relationship, but I also had an underlying feeling of powerlessness about this because every relationship I got into would always break up and I would always wind up feeling really hurt. So I had this underlying fear of rejection that went along with that desire to get into that kind of relationship. And I had no idea at the time that I was feeling powerless. I just knew that I was worried that they would leave me, or I was worried that they would reject me, or I was worried that they wouldn't love me in the way that I wanted to be loved. And that played out in my life until I was actually in my early 30s, when finally it came to the surface when someone broke up with me that I thought I was going to marry. And I went through a kind of transformation. And for the first time in my life, powerlessness wasn't there. And the reason I knew that is I could be around a woman, for example, that I found attractive and not immediately think, maybe this is the one, with the idea that I now had to pursue that. I can have just normal, friendly relationships with women rather than thinking always of them as fulfilling a certain kind of need for me. So that was one example of that kind of powerlessness. But you find that out in the world of crime and the professional ladder. Underneath, very often people like this who become very successful are driven by a feeling of powerlessness, which keeps them working much harder and in a much more focused way and much longer hours. And if you keep that up long enough externally, yes, you can climb the corporate ladder. But all the activity that you're doing, what you've done is you've taken the trajectory of doing a lot of aggressive things to achieve things as a way of smothering the feeling of powerlessness. And with people like that, of course, the net result is they pay a dear price with their health and often with their relationships because they become so focused on their professional life or their work that they ignore the most important relationships in their life with their partner, with their children, with really good friends. And a part of their life that tends to bring people the most joy, their personal relationships, isn't there for them because that sense of powerlessness is driving them on that professional treadmill, that success treadmill, to try to have more and more professional success, more and more corporate success.
So you just gave an example of powerless being the base for you when you needed love from a woman and you were powerless to get it and fearful of rejection and the hurt and sadness that it would bring when someone rejected you. And then also another example of someone feeling powerless in the workplace, being on a professional treadmill where they feel like if they have more success professionally, they're ultimately going to feel whole or fulfilled when in reality, it's an illusion, right? So they keep working and running on the treadmill as hard as they can, taking aggressive action and destroying the other areas of their life that would actually bring them joy.
Absolutely. Distorting their life in a way which doesn't bring them the joy and the pleasure that they're looking for, even if they have a lot of external success on a professional treadmill.
I think probably a lot of humans could relate to one of those situations, yeah. Assuming that if you find the perfect partner, you're going to feel fulfilled, or if you have the most financial success, that you'll feel fulfilled eventually. So for anyone that is like, oh, yeah, it is a sense of powerlessness that's driving some of my behavior, what can people do about it?
So basically, the issue of powerlessness immediately brings to mind the issue of power or empowerment, which is the opposite, obviously, of powerlessness. So interestingly, when we think of someone as having personal power, we generally think of someone who's very good at making things happen in their life. Now, this would be in their personal and their professional life, that they're very good at getting intended outcomes. So that's what we mean normally when we speak of someone being personally powerful. It implies that ability to achieve intended outcomes. But we're going to make a distinction between what is often referred to as power and what I'm going to call natural personal power. Now, natural personal power is something that all of us are capable of experiencing. But in order to do that, we have to be able to whittle away, to get rid of a lot of the programming that we've talked about earlier in this program, a lot of the emotional and social conditioning and programming that we've gone through cuts us off from the ability to experience natural personal power. We've talked about that at the foundation of our being, underneath our programmed or socially conditioned identity, we have a larger identity, a real self, an authentic self, a self which has not been conditioned in any way at all, which is just there. Now, when we're resting in that self, we don't have any self-doubt. We don't have any feelings of powerlessness. We don't have any thoughts of powerlessness. And when you're deep in meditation, it's quite common for people to have experiences of that. And that can happen even to someone who's been meditating, doing effortless meditation for a week, is that sometimes in their meditation, they'll actually contact that place or be in that place. So this is what we refer to when we talk about your real self or your authentic self, that essence of you that underlies all of your social programming and conditioning, which is by its very nature, strong, healthy, whole, and full. Now, natural personal power, and I'm going to actually read this, okay? This occurs as an inner state of consciousness where just by resting in your true self, okay, your being self, and operating out of your own true nature, you can powerfully and successfully generate intended outcomes in your personal, social, and professional life. So notice no strain, there's no effort, there's no force in this at all. It's by actually resting in who you are at the foundations of your being, who you truly are underneath all your conditioning or programming. Now, interestingly, this is the second point. In doing this, we automatically empower those people around us in our personal, social, and professional life. And again, this occurs just by simply being who we are and operating out of our own nature. Now, why this is so important is very often when we think of powerful people, we think of people who are very aggressive. And aggressive or angry people, okay, yes, they often are able to make a lot of things happen in their life out of causing fear in other people. So by their very nature of acting that way, they're actually having the opposite effect. They're disempowering the people who are around them. So this is where people confuse power and force. What we're talking about here is force. And when people are using force like that, it's always because they're actually driven by a feeling of powerlessness. And their way of trying to overcome that is to be very aggressive. And the more aggressive they are, the less they'll feel that feeling of powerlessness. But their net result is they'll cause a lot of pain for a lot of people who are around them. This is quite the opposite of what natural personal power is. Now, interestingly, natural personal power occurs when we're in what psychologists often refer to as the flow state, or Abraham Maslow often called having peak experiences. So these are things that happen in our lives outside of meditation. And once you start meditating regularly and you work on yourself with the kind of inner growth tools we've been working with, this becomes more and more something that is your default state that you're in a lot of the time. My first discovery of this happened when I was 15 years old and I was trying out for the high school basketball team. And what we had to do is we had to play in front of some coaches for two periods of time on two different days. And the first day we did this, I played miserably because I was so scared. I so desperately wanted to be on the team, and I played miserably. The second day, I actually got a serious cold, and the cold made me feel so bad that I had no energy to feel fear. And interestingly, when I went out there onto the floor and the coach blew the whistle and I started playing, there was absolutely no fear inside of me whatsoever. And I got into the state of flow. So I was actually in contact with that deep, authentic, real part of myself that was underneath all my conditioning, simply because physical illness that I was in overrode all of that psychological conditioning. And I played brilliantly. And I didn't hog the ball. I made more shots than anybody else did, but I also fed other people the ball, set them up to have good shots. I played absolutely brilliantly. And while I was playing, I knew that this was happening, but I was also in a state of wonder because it felt so amazing for this to be happening. I would normally always feel fear if I were playing in front of someone who was going to determine what my future was going to be. And I remember at the end of the game, one of the coaches came up to me and asked me my name. I told him, and I knew when he did that he was definitely going to choose me to be on the team. But the truth is, I didn't even care at that moment about that. That wasn't the important thing. The important thing was what I was feeling, which was natural personal power. There was no fear there. I didn't have any feeling of powerlessness. I was actually operating from who I truly was, just from resting in how I truly was. And this can happen to people sometimes quite accidentally, like it did to me when I was 15 years old. After this was over, I had no idea why this happened. It wasn't until I got into this work many years later that I realized that I had slipped into that state of being, that state that we call the flow state or that peak experience. So this is what natural personal power is. And all of us have that capacity within us. But to get to that natural personal power, we have to be able to strip through all that social emotional conditioning and all the belief systems about our limits that have been created. As we get through that over time, more and more natural personal power becomes our default state. And this is the interesting thing. When I was playing that game, I caused other people to play better because I fed them really well the ball at the time when it was good for them to take a shot. I was able to work with them as a team much more effectively than I normally could, making sure that whoever was in the best position is the one that got the shot, not making sure that I was always the one that got the shot. So I made things better for the people that would be. I actually helped them to play better than they normally would. And that's that thing that's so important about natural personal power, is that in the very act of doing the things we're doing, which result in successful outcomes for us, we actually empower the people who are around us. We actually give them a leg up while we're in the process of achieving our intended outcomes. Now, this kind of power is really healthy and can be the basis of building entirely different social structures and institutions in our life. Okay? When people start getting promoted because the very act of what they're doing helps other people grow and become better at what they're doing, you're going to have a very different kind of company or institution or government agency or whatever it might be, okay, when that becomes the motivation of people and the power that allows people to make things happen.
When we think about the difference between power or natural personal power is intrinsic power, yes. Whereas the power that we normally think about is extrinsic.
It's layered on top of us rather than something that comes right from within us.
When we talked about a feeling of powerlessness being below fear, which drives hurt and sadness, which drives anger, in order to alleviate the feeling of powerlessness, it's important to get in touch with your sense of natural personal power. There are a lot of ways of doing that, but a lot of it has to do with inner growth work, which helps with emotional deprogramming.
Along with the meditation, the combination of those two things together clears off the subconscious mind of all those events that are stored as memories, as uncomfortable emotional energy in our subconscious. As more and more of that is released and completed through the inner growth work, and through the effortless meditation, the combination of those two together, automatically we're uncovering that deeper, authentic self.
So the more that people can be in their natural personal power, the less likely we are to be in these patterns of feeling powerless, feeling fear, feeling sadness, and being angry. A lot of the patterns that we've described today with some of these more uncomfortable emotions evaporates. And we live more peaceful lives, and the people around us live more peaceful lives.
Yes. And that can't be too strongly emphasized. You live a more peaceful life, but so do the people around you. These things build over time. If more and more people are in that state, you can imagine the effect that it would have in a company, in an organization, in a community. Over time, we could change the social institutions that currently it also drag us down and creates them into really healthy, empowering institutions.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Walter.
My pleasure.